This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It's a Thursday on the Press Box. Me, Patrick Creighton, and the man, the myth, the legend, Tyler Scott, as we get you ready for a full 3 hours of sports and entertainment, talking about everything that happened last night, what will be tonight, and anything in between, Olympics or otherwise. Texans or Rockets, if possible. Rockets getting ready for summer league, leaving this weekend. Texans continue to practice with the injured Deshaun Watson on the sideline, if that's what you want to go with or believe.
Allegedly.
But the main story last night, odor easy. It was easy to smell where the entire game went wrong last night if you're an Astros fan. Were some sweet moments anyway, but good night. I was ready to turn it off, and I was disgusted. I was so looking forward to the game last night. I was looking forward to them trying to put the icing on the cake and beating the Dodgers yet again, especially if they could beat Scherzer. Brantley goes yard to start the game off, and I'm like, good start. Like it a lot. And then the bottom of the first happened, and then it just kept happening.
You know, I was out watching the game with a friend of mine last night. And bottom of the first inning, apparently I have a reputation for saying a lot of swear words during games.
Oh, really?
Well, they were overflowing in the first couple innings last night. Got to admit, I said a lot of bad words.
Okay.
Jake Odorizzi made me say a lot of bad words. The Astros defense made me say a lot of bad words. But then we got later into the game, and there was almost a little bit of excitement for those of you who were still awake at that hour. There was a little bit of excitement and something that I thought was really interesting. And this to me is, I guess, if you're looking for something positive to take away from this game, here it is. In a four-run game in the ninth inning, the Dodgers decided to bring in their closer, Kenley Jansen. Closers don't usually come into games with a four-run lead in the ninth inning. But they bring in Kenley Jansen, and the reason to bring Jansen in is because, well, the Astros have had a lot of success against Kenley Jansen over the years. And it was, okay, let's get Kenley a chance to have a good outing, a clean inning against the Astros in a game that there's no pressure. This is not a high leverage situation. You're up four. You're getting the lower end of the Astros lineup. So let's give him a shot here, get an easy inning, and let's go home with a 7-3 win. Instead, Kenley Jansen took a Kyle Driver, looked shaky as all hell, and needed to get two AAA batters out in order to escape the inning. One of them, Robel Garcia, is a AAA batter, period.
God, can he go back there as soon as possible, too, by the way?
And then Jake Myers, who literally just got called up from AAA as the final. Jose Altuve on deck, right? Myers is up 3-0, and I'm like, oh, Jansen's all over the damn place. And it's like, please, please walk him, because I want to see Jose Altuve coming up as the tying run in the ninth, and I want to watch Jansen completely melt down, because that was coming. But he was able to get Myers as he put a couple of pitches high in the zone and got Myers a strikeout. But for a game that was 7-3 and the Dodgers were in full control the whole way, Jose Altuve on deck, tying run, ninth inning, gave Astros fans a little excitement. And also, if you're a Dodgers fan, even though you won, you don't feel real good about your closer today.
Yankees and Dodgers, right? I mean, we know that Chapman's had all kinds of problems all year for the Yanks, for as much as they've overpaid him and made him the end-all, be-all as much as they could for just from his arm velocity alone. But he's still recovering from a lot, including some Altuves. But then you look at what the Dodgers have been through with Jansen, and he had blown a couple saves in a row last month. He struggled. And you're right, for the game to end like that, and let's not candy coat it. Joe Kelly Karma's a bitch, dude. And your little pouty face and your nice swing bitch comment when he struck out Correa here, that's all gone now, Chief. Because now anything that anybody wants to talk about with you, even if the Dodger fans still make you a hero, is you're a clown. You're a clown, and you got shown up. And the dumbass on Barstool, Tyler, whatever his name is, that decided after the first pitch that Kelly threw Correa to go, ooh, did you see Correa's like knees buckle? Did you see him almost look scared at that pitch? Well, in terms of bad tweets aging not so well, it didn't take long for everybody to pile on that dumbass when Correa hit a 405-foot bomb.
Yeah, Jared Karrabas. He even added the old takes exposed Twitter account. That it's like the freezing cold takes that they always
As well as he should. That's what I was.
Yeah. He did it. I mean, he freezing cold taked himself.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
And Cray didn't just pimp that home run, right? He had the big old hat. He had the shoes, the little fish tanks in them. He was full blown pimping that homer, and it was glorious to watch.
It was fantastic. And you know what? He got everything that he needed to get out of an at-bat after what he had to endure and go through when, like I said, when Kelly was here and decided to mix it up that way. So I loved every bit of it. Even Daniela got in on it with a gif from Schitt's Creek and enjoyed the hell out of the home run. But look, if that's me, whether you're the most baseball purist or the biggest showboat on the planet, you should pimp that one out, because that's a dude that had it coming about 10 times over. So I loved every bit of that.
Sometimes people just deserve it.
Yeah.
And Carlos made sure to put a show on for all the fans in attendance. And once again, James Click, if you're watching, pay that man.
See, I'm not going that far. I'm not going as far as you're going, simply because of the fact that it's at what price? I'm not overpaying Carlos Correa. I appreciate, look, his glove is phenomenal. I mean, if he doesn't win the Gold Glove this year, something's really wrong with Major League Baseball. And we know there already is plenty to say that's wrong about Major League Baseball. But his defense is off the planet. But the bat is just, it's inconsistent. Now, so far, for 1 year, he's dispelled the injury bug. But otherwise, that's been a problem throughout his career and one of the major knocks against him. And the second thing is the consistency at the plate, the ability to want to be paid like some of the best in the game, starting with his boy Lindor. You can't do that unless, and Lindor's having an off year too. But when you look at Tatis Jr. and you look at Lindor and some of the contracts he was pointing at and some of the money he wanted, you're not a 300 hitter, and you're not hitting for the power that a lot of those guys do, and you're not doing the things offensively to justify 35, 40 and up. I'll go 25. If I need to broach 30 a year, I'm going to have the conversation, but I'm not going any farther than that, I don't think.
See, I don't have a problem paying top talent. And if you overpay top talent, that's fine. Those are the guys you can overpay for in Major League Baseball. You overpay for the elite talent. That is something the Yankees used to do because, you know, Yankees, Mets, the Yankees would overpay the very best in the game, and the Mets would overpay guys who were like tier three or tier four and regret those contracts horribly. Carlos Correa, as you mentioned, Gold Glove defender, elite defensive player. He's also the de facto leader of the team. He is the guy.
I agree with that.
He is the guy who's not afraid to face the media. He is the guy who's not afraid to face his teammates. He's the guy who goes to the mound and settles down his pitchers. Carlos Correa is all those things. If you take a look at what he is, and I understand last year was 60 games, but if we're going to count it as a full season, well, Carlos Correa was healthy last year. And Carlos Correa is healthy this year. And he's only 26 years old. He's also tracking for a 30-homer, 850 OPS, 95, maybe 100 RBI season as an elite defender and team leader. The reality is there is nobody that they can get to replace Carlos Correa who is as good as Carlos Correa at all facets of the game and the leadership aspect. That guy doesn't exist.
Pat, I disagree.
Who are they getting?
I think there are guys out there. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to be available to you.
And well, that's what I mean. You can't get somebody to replace him who does everything he does. That guy's not available.
But you can find guys that can hit the ball better, that can play defense about as well. Or like we said, it's a versatility thing. If everybody's going to outprice themselves at shortstop, then Bregman's going to be your shortstop. And you can go find a third baseman. And you can find a Chris Bryant. Or you can find someone to play third base that's going to give you similar to Bregman-type numbers, while Bregman doesn't slip off that much defensively, is better offensively, and can still be a leader in that clubhouse that's respected because he's one of that core four guys that's been there.
But if the argument against Correa is, well, he hasn't always stayed healthy, well, how can you not have the same argument for Bregman? Because it's 2 years now that Bregman hasn't always been healthy. So I don't think you can make that argument on Correa anymore. And
well, you can because nothing has dispelled it except for the fact that this year so far. But other than that, it's been multiple years. It's not like Bregman, like you're saying, the last year and a half. It's been his entire career.
This season and last season, Carlos Correa has been healthy. Correa is a proven postseason performer. Matters.
Last season was hardly a season, a full season.
He still didn't get hurt. He didn't get hurt.
He got dinged up.
And he hit like a champ in the postseason.
Postseason.
And he's hitting well right now. And he's playing great last night.
I want him to be a part of this team. But I don't want him at his numbers.
If you got to pay him $33 million, then pay him.
That's close enough. I can see that. I'll see that argument from you. But I'm not going to the numbers and the contract number, the 10-year plus length and the amount of money that he thinks, the 300 and some million he thinks he's worth. He's not getting 10 years, and he's not getting $300 million from me if I'm Jim Crane.
If I got to pay him like Frankie Lindor, I'll pay him like Frankie Lindor.
Oh, come on, Pat. That's too much.
If you look at his numbers versus Lindor's numbers, guess what? Lindor's not better offensively. And you can't
not this
say,
year.
And not for his career. If you cume their numbers, their wars are identical. I was surprised, but it's true. And Correa is a better defender.
I would agree with
that. And if we said, well, who's more likely to be my team captain, Carlos Correa or Frankie Lindor? It's Carlos Correa. If you have to overpay because elite talent, premium position, I'll live with that. Because I can't go out on the market and find a guy that gives me everything Carlos Correa does. I can't go trade for a guy who's going to be what Carlos Correa is. That player just isn't available. Guys at Correa's level don't usually become available.
But you know there's a surplus of shortstops that are going to be out there.
Maybe there's going to be some shortstops that are out there, but none of them are
Story,
as good as,
Seager, and Baez
not
are going to be
out
there.
Not as good as Carlos Correa. None of them.
Overall.
Overall, not a one is as good as Carlos Correa. Not average, not defense, not plate discipline, not leadership.
Oh,
not one.
Stop with the plate discipline, okay? Because I'm tired of him watching two straight down the middle of the plate all the time.
Well, if you know Javi Baez was leading the National League
in
strikeouts.
I get that part. So, I'm not saying, okay, I get it. But like you're talking about, I can pick and choose players too. I can pick and choose players that have a better bat. But you know what? It's depending on what you want and what you like and what you're after. Now, for the perfect fit for the team that he's on, absolutely. But like I'm saying, I want him back. I'm not into the $300 million 10-year deal range for him. I think it's too big of a risk. And you see too many of these long-term contracts, even already Tatis Jr., for the length of that contract with that shoulder, and he's probably out for the year, he's going to need surgery, and you don't need to go on that kind of parallel universe with a Pujols contract or contracts like that.
There's an argument to be made for that.
All right.
And we'll get to that next.
Sounds good. All right, we got plenty more discussion going on as we hit to the first break of the show, but we're going up until 4 o'clock, so that means we've got plenty more opportunities for you to join us. 713-780-3776, HRNP Listener Line. You can call that number, text that number. If you text, put your name on it so we can talk to you directly. Otherwise, hit us up on Twitch. Hit us up on Twitter. We got a giveaway coming up this hour and every hour during the show. So if you want to win a couple of tickets to the Texas Trophy Hunters Association, where my man Patrick Creighton will be making an appearance this weekend, you can see him and check out the show. We're going to be giving away some tickets to that all show long. Keep it right where you got it. It's Press Box ESPN.
That. To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
You heard the man, me, Pat, and Tyler, till 4 o'clock as we roll through a Thursday in the big city. Talking some Astros to start out the program after last night's fiasco. Look, and we'll continue the Correa conversation, but at some point we got to have Odorizzi talk too. Because I'm about done with Jake unless he really figures some stuff out in a hurry. Because I'm going to need Urquidy to come back. In the playoffs, I'm not going to need five starters. And right now, I'm not sure Jake Odorizzi should be on my playoff roster if that's the Jake Odorizzi we're going to get.
This is now, I mean, look, this was a really bad start for him. He got roughed up a bit by the Mariners. You know, they tried to get him into the sixth inning. It didn't work. His previous start, he couldn't get through the fifth against the Arlington Junk Grabbers without giving up three runs. But this last start was the most concerning because he gave up four homers. And he gave up two homers against the Mariners. So that's now six homers in 8 1/3 innings. He talked after the game about his mechanics being out of whack or whatnot. That's fine. Then sideline him to work on his mechanics, skip him a start, let him throw some bullpens, get whatever it is corrected, and then get him back out there. Because you can't have Jake Odorizzi, who basically is a five-inning pitcher, go three innings and he's given up seven runs. Now, look, the Astros defense did not help him last night. But nobody on the field gave up four homers. Those four homers are all Jake Odorizzi.
No doubt. And you know what? If you watched carefully from the first at-bat from Mookie Betts, he went in and was tipping off, including a real long conversation with Will Smith, which paid off, because he was talking about whether it was tipping off the breaking pitch, but the breaking pitch was sitting. It was not, there was no bite to it.
Yeah, his stuff was flat.
Yeah, there was no bite to it at all. And again, like you said, the home run ball is what concerns me the most because that has been the overriding factor that isn't going away, that is consistent throughout his last several starts. And that's a problem. I don't need that and want that, especially like you said, when they're trying to figure out the defense, when they have issues that they're going to have to figure out in center field so that they need to get healthy and then they need to figure out who's my everyday center fielder because it's not Kyle Tucker. It's just not. And I know they started him there when he was in the minors. But Kyle Tucker doesn't have the speed, the arm, or the glove to be the center fielder. He's perfect where he is in right. Brantley's perfect where he is in left. It's either Chaz McCormick or the kid that can't, Myers, who unfortunately with some of the situation they put him into, he doesn't have a hit yet, and all he's doing is striking out.
Now, I 100% agree with you. Kyle Tucker should not be in center field. All right, he's a corner outfielder. He's been primarily a corner outfielder his whole life. They've tried to experiment with him in center. It doesn't go all that well. He doesn't track the ball as well. When they traded Miles Straw, they made the decision either it's going to be Chaz McCormick or it's going to be Jake Myers. Now, I saw plenty of Jake Myers at AAA.
Yes, you did.
And he can go fetch it. He's got wheels. He's got power. He was raking the hell out of the ball in AAA. He was also having what I think was probably his best minor league season. Calling him up and then, okay, now sit on the bench. We'll get you one at bat here and there isn't really doing him any favors. You're not helping continuing his growth by calling him up to sit on the bench. If you're going to call up the young guy, play him. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you could bring up, you could have made the move to bring up a guy like Jose Siri and let him be the, quote, backup guy.
I'd have hit you if you said Taylor Jones one more time.
No, I'm don't need to see Taylor Jones.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
But Jose Siri, another guy, he's got power, he's got speed. Now, he strikes out a lot, but he could play all three outfield positions. And if you sat him on the bench, well, he's 26, 27. He's had he's had some time in the major leagues. We kind of know what he is. When you have a guy like Myers who is developing and now developing this year maybe faster than ever, to then pause that, so, all right, you could sit on the bench with a fifth outfielder. If that was the decision, well, Chaz should be starting in center. The whole reason they felt comfortable enough to deal Miles Straw, who they never valued because he doesn't hit any homers. And look, that is something the Astros, as an analytically based team, they do not value speed players. They value power players. And that's why Tony Kemp was never valued. And that's why Miles Straw was never valued. And why
is that unfair, though, Pat? Because they got spoiled with George Springer, a center fielder that defensively was really good, but had all the pop in the world. And all of a sudden, it set false expectations. Because most center fielders around baseball aren't home run hitters.
No, they're not. And look, this is – George was the analytics dream, right? Go fetch it, big arm, big power, you know, came up big in big spots. He was the analytics dream. They chose not to pay him. But we saw when Tony Kemp came up and they needed somebody who could fill in. They just, man, they always, no matter how much he'd hit, they'd find a way to not play him or push him back because the Astros like guys who hit for power. They don't value the stolen base. They don't steal that many bases anymore. As a team, they don't do it. So to have a guy like Miles Straw, whose game is built around his legs and speed, whereas Chaz McCormick, and look, his minor league numbers do not in any way belly this power. He has never hit for anything close to this kind of power in his life. Maybe he changed his swing. Maybe he had a J.D. Martinez moment. I don't know. But for right now, Chaz is hitting for power. Fine. Put him in the lineup. Bat him eighth. Stop doing this tooling around with Kyle and center. You're moving too much outfield. And you already have a left fielder, regardless of who they play in left. You already have a left fielder that you need extra coverage in center to help that guy handle. Because whether it's Brantley, whether it's Jordan, whether it's a Ledmus, it doesn't matter who they put in left field, your center fielder has to cover a little extra ground for them. Tucker can handle right. Let him play right. Let Chaz play center. Let Jake Myers play center. I'll live with Jake Myers striking out if he goes out there and he plays the badass defense that I've seen him play.
Here's what I'm worried about. You tell me all these great things about Jake Myers, which you saw in AAA. But how many guys have we seen that have been studs in AAA and they get to the big league level and they're not the same player? And we just rattled some of those names off. And we continue to see these guys for the Astros. They can rip the cover off of it. And look, Abraham Toro had a little bit of a revelation from the time his last couple games as an Astro and then when he was traded to the Mariners. But Toro couldn't hit in the big leagues consistently when he was with the Astros, with the exception of that little spurt of power at the end of it. We know that Robel Garcia has no business on this roster. Robel Garcia should be permanently in Sugar Land. That's another reason why I was so happy that you're getting Aledmys Diaz back, because I can't stand to see him at third base anymore in a major league lineup and expect that I'm going to get anything out of him, and his average and all his numbers show that. So Tyler Jones is another one. You keep going up and down the line and say, there are guys that were meant for AAA pitching that don't figure it out on a big league level. I want to see what the kid has in Myers. I'm fine with that, right? And now you've got a stretch of games against less than stellar talent where maybe he gets some consistent run. But I also realized that Miles Straw was that guy too. And then they didn't like him, and then they started to like him, and then he started to come on, but then they traded him. And I think it's also that false expectation that this franchise has, call it analytics, call it whatever you want, that George Springer set the bar so high offensively, on top of defensively, that it sets up false expectations that a lot of these guys can't live up to.
I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think there is some of that afterglow with George Springer of, well, you know, that guy's not George. If we take Mike Trout out of the equation, who is George? In all of baseball, who is George? Who is a 30-plus home run hitter who's going to hit 280 or so with a on-base about 100 points higher? Who is that guy in baseball other than Mike Trout?
I was going to say, Mike Trout's one of them, but that's unfair.
That's pretty much it. So when they made the decision to let George walk, you know, all right, well, Georgie's a little older to be hitting free agency in 6 years and all that. Again, overpay for your top talent. And there are people who will say, well, look, George got hurt. So we don't know what happened, you know, between George being dealt, whatever he dealt with in Toronto, where, you know, they couldn't even go to Toronto. They had to stay in Dunedin. They couldn't even go to Toronto. I don't know what happened that eventually he got hurt. But you know what? He's hitting the snot out of the ball.
Player of the month in July.
And that's got to be the most dangerous lineup in baseball.
Yeah, another leadoff home run last night, 42nd, I believe, of his career. But Springer dingers, we're used to it. That's what I'm saying. It's unfair for the other guys.
When I say most dangerous lineup, I mean they have so much power in their lineup. At any time, anybody is taking you deep.
I saw a stat that Springer's leading the league in leadoff home runs since 2010. Mm-hmm. He didn't get called up until 2014.
Yeah.
I was there at Minute Maid. The night that he got called up was after a game they had just lost, and I was writing up my stories. And then all of a sudden, it comes over. Astros have recalled George Springer, and I was, and literally that just stopped everything for the night. I'm calling in to my boss saying George Springer just got called up, and scrapping everything and writing all new stories. And like at that, from that moment on, the interest level in the Astros just began a straight up trajectory.
Well, and you remember too that more they were that was in the midst of their 100 loss seasons, so everybody was watching online more Oklahoma City. I think at the time they were the 88ers. The Oklahoma City minor league team got more attention than the Astros did because everybody wanted to see George Springer, and they knew the organization was holding him back for more team control when they knew that the right thing to do would have already had him up on the big league roster to get him ready to play. He's a hell of a player. He is missed. There's no way they should have paid him that money, and we'll get back to it if you'd like, the conversation about whether Correa should get anything like that, because you think yes. I don't think so. I don't think he should be getting upwards of 30-plus for 10 years.
Maybe we... It sounds like a conversation that we're about to have next.
Sure, why not? We'll continue with more dialogue on your Houston Astros and plenty more things to come. It's the Press Box, ESPN.
This is Ed Too Tall Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
Hey, it's got a ring to it, good sound to it, a lot of bass and a lot of volume. It's Pat, it's Joel, it's Tyler. Tyler makes up for the volume that we bring, as it's Joel, Pat, and Silent Tyler for the most part, as we roll through the first hour of the Press Box on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. Not happy, by the way, that we have no coffee within the office and the four walls that is Gal Media. Not the day that I needed to hear that news. So we're trying to rectify that by going outside the walls while we continue with our conversation about your favorite baseball team, the Houston Astros. All right, you want to have this conversation? And you know what? It's a good discussion. And, you know, there's no name-calling and all the stuff that social media can bring. But we obviously have different viewpoints on this. Like, I want him back in Carlos Correa's case. I just don't – he said during the negotiations, the Astros are not willing to – they told me they're not willing to do what we are looking for, which is long-term with the right money or big money.
Usually when you see these – 10-year deals go out. Like in the past, they would be to a guy who was 30, 32 years old. And now you're talking about paying guys into their late 30s and early 40s. And those deals never work out. They didn't work out with A-Rod. They didn't work out with Pujols.
Pujols is the one that always resonates in my brain.
Two of the all-time greatest hitters in the game, two of the best hitters of their generation, both of them, as they got later on in their careers, kind of had this cliff they fell off where it was a decline, and then wow, they hit a valley. When you're paying guys that deep into their career, they're never going to end well. You know, some of the longer term deals that have worked out were given to guys who were a lot younger. Clayton Kershaw had an 8-year deal that worked out because he got it when he was young. He didn't get it when he was 33. When you're talking about Carlos Correa possibly getting an 8 to 10 year deal, Carlos is going to be 27 at the end of September, which a 10-year deal would put him to age 37. Now, age 37, he's not going to play as well as he does now. We know that. So maybe you front load the deal a little. Maybe you put some team options back there. Maybe you front load the deal so at the back end of the contract, you're not paying him nearly as much as you are early. I have no problem paying him extra money in his peak years to pay him less later on, if that's what it winds up being. But if the market right now is, hey, if you are an elite shortstop, you're in this $35 million range, then that's what the market is. And all the the best shortstops are all going to be looking for money in that range. It doesn't matter if you are the best one of the top five or you're the worst one of the top five. You're going to get that money. So for me, I have no honestly, I would prefer to make it 8 years or less because like
okay, that's
you,
where I was going to ask.
I don't like 10-year deals. The chances of a 10-year deal not being a disaster for at least the last 2 years are really minute. But at least in Correa's case, you're talking about his final year essentially being age 37, not age 41. And there's a big difference sure. in those 4 years.
And that's where I was going to get to with you. I wanted to know the term length because it's hyper important to me because that's that 10 years is that $300 million threshold. And I think for all the reasons that I've given over and over again in worried about his health, in worried about a Pujols type contract, even though you make a great point about where he's at age-wise as opposed to when Pujols signed his deal to go to the Angels. My thing is, look, I don't know what his vision and his agent's vision is of long-term, but if he's still good at the end of the deal that you sign him to, nothing says you can't sign him again. And if he likes it here truly and he made his home here and he doesn't want to leave here, they've been pretty good about making sure they take care of their own unless you fall off the planet like Josh Reddick and other guys, and then you just go, eh, you know what? It worked out for a while, and now it doesn't. So I'm okay with 5 to 7 years. I'm not okay with 10 years. And then we get into the term per year.
So let's use the Lindor deal as a benchmark.
What is it, 315?
It's 10 years, 341.
$341.
Now he got a $21 million signing bonus that they spread out over the length of the contract. So he averages out base salary $32 million a year, and then he got $21 million up front. His last year will be his age 37 season. That's probably the framework you are talking about for Carlos Correa. Very similar players for their numbers for their career. And similar age as they're going to get their contract. That's probably, he's not going to get the Tatis deal, but this is probably a realistic framework for what you're talking about for Carlos Correa. And if you're telling me I got to pay Carlos Correa the same thing I pay Franco Lindor, and that's the market, I'll take Carlos Correa.
I'll take Carlos Correa, but I'm not taking that contract. I don't think that it's the right risk to take if you're Jim Crane. I don't think that's the smart move for this franchise. I think it's far too much. I think the signing bonus is too big. I think the fact that, sure, he's been more healthy this season, but I already know what the track record is. And offensively, it's the same thing. And you could say, well, it's because he was injured. Well, okay, if that's an offset of the fact that they're all connected, right? So if you can't stay healthy and that affects a different part of your game, that also affects when you start saying he has the overall, whether we say five tools, five stars, five areas, more than any other shortstop that's on the market. Does he though? Because if one of those things is altered by injuries, so will others. The fact that he's been injured for the majority of his career for good portions of time, even though he hasn't this year, factors into me in a long-term deal. I'm more hesitant because of that than anything else. I totally agree with you. He's become maybe originally the de facto, but now the leader in the clubhouse of this ball club. And he did a hell of a job in the playoffs last year. And I love the fact that when he goes to the mound or otherwise, when he is talking, players are listening. I don't take anything away from him. Because like I said, I'd like him to stay. But this has to be a fair deal on both sides. And if he's looking for that Lindor contract, and granted that was in New York, that was an owner that was looking to spend as much as possible to make a splash to try and be competitive marketing-wise and otherwise with the Yankees, it's not apples to apples because that's not Jim Crane.
If you want to be a team in the fourth biggest city in the country, you got to spend like a big boy. And look, the Astros, I can't complain too much about their not wanting to go over the cap or go over the luxury tax when Max Scherzer wasn't available because the Astros are spending right up to the luxury tax, and in the past, that never would have happened. Jim Crane deserves credit because early on in his tenure as owner, when their entire team payroll was less than A-Rod's salary, everybody piled on and said he's a cheapskate, he's over-leveraged, doesn't know what he's doing, he's over his head, and Jim Crane said, when the time is right to spend, I will spend, and he has backed that up. Now, now that they are, you know, a team that's won a championship and a team that's been to four straight ALCS series, and they let their star center fielder go, people are upset. Well, if you let your star center fielder go under the guise of, well, we need money to pay Correa, and then you don't pay Correa, well, then why the hell did you let George Springer go? Mm-hmm. You can't, we didn't want to pay too much for George because we need this money for Carlos. Okay, now it's time to pay Carlos. Well, you know, Carlos costs a little bit too much money, and I know we're not going to have Zach Greinke next year, and I don't know if we're going to have Justin Verlander. Maybe we do, maybe we don't, but nope, it's still too much money. Then all your reasoning for letting George go was stupid. It was short-sighted. It was watching my dollars now and not later.
No,
because if you don't bring George and then you don't bring Carlos, you are letting your championship core walk out the door with nothing to show for it.
I get it, and it's frustrating, and I feel your pain. But here's the thing. It's not apples to apples here either because George was far older, and George would be far more on the decline if you were going to give him the kind of money that he was going to get, which the market started to show he was going to get,
but
as opposed to the unknown right now is we don't know what the market's going to bring for Carlos Correa.
If they had been proactive, which they really fail at lately, if they had been proactive and locked George and Carlos up the year before they were going to hit free agency, they would have gotten them at better deals because the market would not have continued to grow. But they don't see that. And this is twice now that they have failed to do that. They didn't lock up George a year early. They didn't lock up Carlos. If they had locked up Carlos a year early, they could have got him for $200 million max.
I don't think so. I don't think,
now they can't get him.
I don't think he and his people and Daniela were going to let him not at least explore trying to get more. I don't think that he would have settled at all for a Bregman-type contract. Not for the life of me do I think that if it was on the table, he'd have snatched it.
If you had, we're talking about this in 2019. And it was another season where he'd had injuries and been banged up.
But that's
a bit.
Another reason why the organization says, why should I do this now? He's been dinged up over and over and over again, and I still got time. Why am I throwing that money at him now?
Well, when you run that risk of, well, let's see what happens. Well, what's happening is for the last season plus, if you don't want to count last year as a full season, for the last season plus, he's been healthy. He's played Elite D. He's become your leader. He's hitting like you expected him to hit, 17 homers, 845 OPS. His on-base is almost 370. He is everything. He's the whole package down. Now you got to pay the freight on the full package.
All right, if you guys want to get on the discussion, a lot of people are chiming in, texting otherwise, Twitter and Twitch. We're here for you, 713-780-3776, HR and P listen line calls, text otherwise, as I mentioned, Twitch and Twitter. We're going to come up with next segment, our first opportunity for you to win a couple of tickets to the Texas Trophy Hunters Association show. Patrick Crayton's going to be making an appearance this weekend. You want to see that alone. You need tickets to go see Pat, get a selfie, sign an autograph, have a coffee.
Talk some smack.
Really?
Oh, we always talk smack.
Oh, smack talking it is then. That's how you're going to win them. It's coming up next as we wrap up the first hour of the program. It's Press Box ESPN.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map.
Show me how to lie. You're getting better all the time and turning up against one is an art that's hard to teach.
This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
All right, look, we've got plenty to get to in the final segment of the first hour of the program. But before we do anything else, I want to do this. I'm going to do this a couple times today. If you guys want to go to this Texas Trophy Hunters Association extravaganza, it's the 45th, you know, at NRG Center. It's it's August 6th through the 8th. It's this weekend. Pat Creighton's going to be there Saturday afternoon.
Noon to 2.
So you need to book your time accordingly to make sure that you can talk smack and get selfies with Pat. It's the latest deer hunting equipment, technology, hunting accessories, clothing, rifles, knives, archery, other exciting gear. You can see last two seasons' biggest bucks from all over the state of Texas in the annual deer competition. New this year, interactive center stage, live Q&As, seminars, and more. It's a fun place for the whole family. The kids can see the gator country, live alligators and snakes of Texas, free active military and veterans admissions with ID, police and first responders also. You got to check it out at huntersextravaganza.com. But right now, caller 10-713-780-3776. Caller 10-713-780-ESPN. You and a guest. Texas Trophy Hunters Extravaganza. NRG Center this weekend. Good luck. We'll have some more later in the show. Now, I want to give a little shout out to Flims Cherry, who has the over intelligent way of thinking, because he's on the same, he or she's on the same wavelength as me. I have mentioned this name to you before. It's not what I want, but what I could get. So if the market dictates, whether it be the Yankees or otherwise, that Correa's price tag is too rich and too high for the blood of Jim Crane and or James Click, Marcus Semien's a guy that, for all the things that you said and bring to the table, Marcus Semien's a guy that I think is better offensively, that I think may not be as good defensively, but he's versatile and he's not a negative defensively, to where you could put him either at third or short, and he and Bregman, depending on how you want to do that. But he could go back to his, he's playing a lot of second base this year in Toronto. He could go back to shortstop and Bregman could stay at third base. You may slip a slight bit defensively, but you uptake, in my opinion, offensively.
I think you might slip more than a small tick. And look, I like Marcus Semien. Marcus Semien is a good player. I like Marcus Semien. Realistically, Marcus Semien has had one really good season. We had 33 homers, 92 RBI. And that was his 2019 in Oakland. He had a really good season. This year, he's hitting pretty well in Toronto in a lineup with a lot of power. He's at 25 homers. He's hitting 275. If you grade them out career-wise, Marcus Semien for his career is a 257 hitter with a 324 on base. Carlos Correa is a 275 hitter with a 355 on base. Correa's career OPS is 835. Semien's is 761. He's not a better player than Carlos Correa. He's not a better defender. He's
okay, but
not
Pat,
a better
be realistic.
Hitter.
You may not find a better player, but you won't find a player as expensive either. That has to be factored in.
You can't
always keep all of your best players when you have to pay so many the big dollars you are already paying to a majority of the guys that you wanted to wrap up.
See, I disagree. You absolutely can. This idea that, oh, I can't pay because the tax line. The Astros have been printing money since 2015. Printing it.
Right, but he's going to give you the sob story that since the pandemic, they're not. And they've taken hits and they've taken losses. And he's going to act like you can't recoup that, which we know you can.
Of course they can.
But he's not going to spend it.
Major League Baseball made record profits this entire decade up and through the pandemic. So you're telling me that one year where, you know, they didn't make as much money as they did. They had a very small margin for one year.
All those record
profits, all of a sudden, they vanished. They didn't save a single dollar for a rainy day. I don't buy it.
You can't have rain nights, Pat, if you don't have games where fans are in attendance.
Well, fans are in attendance now.
I know now
and
they
here,
are.
I'm this
kidding,
year,
but I'm just saying. They had, what, 10 ring nights?
Right, but they had 30 home dates last year that they didn't have fans. 30. Well, they got 81.
You know what? I appreciate your aggressive thought process in the fact that all owners are on the same wavelength as those that believe that you can keep all of your best players and keep them and keep paying them. I honestly just think that's not the scenario here in Houston. I don't think Jim Crane's that guy. He's already shown that. Otherwise, George Springer would still be here, and they would have found a way to keep him here. I think that is the point that I'm trying to make. That's why, for as much as I'd like to see Correa stay in an Astros uniform, I don't think that from a management and ownership standpoint, if he gets just one team interested at giving him more than what the Astros had already offered or more years, whatever the case may be, they'll balk on it and go, fine, then I'm walking. Then you've got to find the next best thing. So that's why I'm saying Simeon's close enough and is going to probably be $8 million a year less than Springer and probably not as long a term.
Well, Simeon is, like I said, he's going to be 31 in September.
He got a one-year deal from Toronto.
He got a one-year deal for $18
million. That's a bargain.
That is a bargain. And you know what? He's got 25 homers already. He's going to hit 40 bombs this
exactly.
year.
Exactly.
You don't think he's going to ask for a monster contract? Because he sure as hell
is. But you don't think winning's going to be important? You don't think that? I'll tell you right now. They throw the same offer at Marcus Simeon that they threw to open the discussions with Correa. Marcus Simeon's an Astro because he knows he's going to win. He knows he's going into a winning environment with a club around him. So he knows he's not going to a crap team just to get paid. And he's going to say, yeah, I am 31. But if you can give me five at 20 or 25 a year, I'm signing today. And that's a big deal for Jim Crane.
I don't think that he's going to sign for 20 or 25 million. I think he's going to push more. And I also think that when you're talking about the Toronto Blue Jays, who have invested a lot of money into their roster, yet still have money to spend.
They got a lot of guys they got to pay, Pat.
Again, if you want to win,
you got to pay
Bichette. You got to pay.
You got to pay Vlad Jr. You got to pay a lot of guys. You're already paying Springer. You just went out and tried to and are paying veterans that you traded for and signed pitching-wise. You've got a lot of dollars on your payroll, and you're Toronto.
Some of those guys, though, you know, you've got several years of arbitration before you've got to really pay them. If you're going to give Marcus Simeon a deal, I don't necessarily think if you hit 40-plus home runs and you have a career year in homers and a career year in RBI, do I want to leave? I'm really successful here. And this team is built to compete. This year, next year, they'll go out and get another pitcher this year. Toronto is a team on the up.
No doubt.
And they've got money.
But the Astros, in order to stay a team on the up,
Keep their own dude.
No, but they've got to be smart financially because they have the ownership group that isn't going to overspend. They're not going to be like the Mets. They're not going to be like the Yankees. They're not going to be like the Dodgers.
Well, the only team in the mix that's way over the cap is over the tax line is the Dodgers.
Right.
The Yankees and the Mets are under.
For now.
And they will be for the year unless they suddenly
right, for this
somebody
year.
Magically appears. But the point being, the CBA's up at the end of this year. The Players Association is long on record. There is no way on God's green earth they are signing any kind of a deal where the tax line is anything close to what it is. Baseball revenues exploded over the last 15 years, and the tax line went up $2 million a year. Major League Baseball salaries have gone backwards over the last 5 years, while revenues, with the exception of last season, went up. These are things the PA is very well aware of. They're not going to sign on to another tax situation like what they have. It's going to look really different. Or we're not going to have baseball.
Here's the other thing when you're talking about the market and you're talking about the money and you're talking about who's going to pay what. There's a surplus of shortstops on the market. If the and there's only so many teams that need a shortstop.
Every team pretty much could look and say, we need a shortstop. Even teams that have them, the guys who are hitting the market
you gotta consider
are
the market
are
too.
The upper echelon.
Milwaukee
of
would love
teams.
To have a shortstop. They're not paying that kind of money for any of the guys that you're talking about. They're not paying 18 at Simeon. They're not going up from there because they're not that market that can afford to pay that kind of salary. So there might be some more teams that need a shortstop, but of the teams that have the money, that have a tendency to spend, there's only going to be so many. The Yankees are probably going to target Correa.
I would think they will.
And so you look at that. The Dodgers are either going to re-sign Seager.
I think the Dodgers might go with Trey Turner.
Or I was going to say, or they're going to just move Trey Turner from second base to short.
You know what? Seager's been disappointed, but that doesn't mean that.
He's been dinged up too. He had a broken thumb.
You look at the teams that hit over the last several years have spent money. The Nats have spent big money. The Jays are spending it. The Giants have been big spenders. The Cardinals usually spend money. The Halos spend money. The Sox spend money.
Who are the
money.
Giants spending money on?
The Giants, in the past, have spent a ton of money.
Well, in the last couple of years, they haven't. They've been on the super cheap until suddenly they got good again. They're still playing Longoria, but other
Giants
than that,
have had some, Giants
and Cueto,
have had some,
they're still paying Cueto.
They've had some years where they've had
top five. Way back.
Not that far back. They're still paying Posey. They're still paying Cueto. They're paying Gausman $19 million. They got Brandon Crawford on for $15 million. They just took on Chris Bryant. Who, I mean, if you,
yeah,
for
prorated.
What you gave to get him, you're probably going to bring him back. I mean, so they've got some guys that they have who they're paying. And that's a team that in the offseason will be aggressive. They'll look to bring guys in. The Mets probably aren't going after him because they've got Lindor, and now they just got Baez, and I would expect they'll probably
make a run to keep
Baez, yep. too. So the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Phillies, there's a dozen teams that have a history of spending over the last 6 years, who want to be in the mix, who want to fight for playoff spots. It's not like, oh, well, you know, there's not enough teams for all the dollars. There's plenty of dollars. If the Padres can jump from 25th to 8th in payroll, it shows you size of the market.
You have to want to do it. Jim Crane has shown he doesn't want to do it.
Well, when the rules change,
we'll see.
I would bet that Jim Crane's attitude changes because now he's.
You hope it would, but you don't know that.
I think they've got issues about giving money to other teams.
All right, we
got
to get to the break. We're done with the first hour of the program. Still got 2 hours to go. Plenty of opportunities for you guys to join in on any kind of discussion we're having. And obviously, we're baseball centric in hour number one. Lots of other things to get to as we press on. So give us a call, give us a text, a tweet, or Twitch. We're here for you. It's Tyler, Pat, and Joel. It's the Press Box ESPN.
ESPN 97.5.